In this episode, I chatted to the lovely Helen Russell all about her latest book, How to Be Sad. She's also written some incredible books all about her life in Denmark and research into happiness around the world, including books such as The Atlas to Happiness, Leap Year, and Living Danishly. These are all incredible books, and it was really nice just to have an open conversation about how sadness is just part of being human. Enjoy the episode. Brilliant. Well, welcome, Helen. Lovely to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Cold, but I think many people are right now. Other than that, okay, thank you.
What is the temperature over there?
I mean, just sort of wet and damp. It's not, we had sort of minus 17 a couple of weeks ago, and now it's just that sort of bone chilling dampness, like a cold, wet lick when you step outside.
Oh, love it. You know, we've been teased in the UK because it suddenly was like sunny for a kind of a weekend.
I heard people wore shorts.
Yes. And I was like, brilliant. Let's get the barbecue cleaned because, you know, one day we'll be allowed to see our friends and family again. Anyway, I'm so glad to have you on the show. I'd love you to just tell listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do to start with.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Helen Russell. I am a journalist and author and speaker, and I used to work as editor of marieclaire.co.uk. And then nearly 8 years ago now, my husband was offered his dream job working for Lego in Denmark. And we relocated our lives to Denmark and everything sort of changed. I started writing books and researching into happiness worldwide.
I'd love to tell you how I came across you.
Yeah.
So I was in a Airbnb in Devon with my husband. And you know, when you have the little libraries on the shelf?
Oh, I love those. Yes.
There's just random books. And I thought, oh, that looks great because I love the kind of Scandinavian culture. And I just couldn't put it down. Oh. My husband was like, you know that we're here together? It's like a mini honeymoon. Oh. And then from there on, that's when I sent you a message and said, oh, I'd love to have you on the show. And then I've read a lot of your other books. So that's kind of the story of how I found you.
Thank you. I am honoured. And also congratulations on having got married. I mean, this last year doesn't count because everyone's been locked down. So you're still a newlywed. That's exciting.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, tell you all about it. It's a lockdown wedding, 15 people and then everyone else on Zoom.
Oh. Oh.
Anyway, so obviously I'd love to talk a little bit about your new book, How to Be Sad, but I can't do that unless I've kind of jumped into some of the other stuff that you've done. So sure. I'd love to talk a little bit about How to Live Danishly. So what was the inspiration for, well, actually, did you start writing the book because you moved?
No, my brain is not clever like that. No, I had no plan. People have plans and I am in a total admiration of them. And unfortunately, my brain does not work that way. No, I left my job. My husband and I have been trying to start a family for years. We'd had years of fertility treatment. It was all very sort of stressful living at the high-paced city life that many, many local listeners will have experienced. And the fertility treatment just wasn't working. I kept getting told, maybe you're too stressed. And then this other life opportunity was dangled in front of us. We could swap everything we knew for the unknown. And at the time, I had never even been to Denmark. I couldn't have pointed out Denmark on a map of Denmark. I had no clue at all. So we visited one weekend to check the place out. And it was at around this time that Denmark kept getting voted the happiest country in the world, and actually has been voted among the happiest in polls going back to the 1970s. So I became fascinated by this. I think there was some sort of diversion from the fear of arriving in a new country and having no friends, no job. I didn't speak the language. I didn't know anyone. I thought, well, I've got my journalist training. Maybe I'll approach this from with an anthropological eye and just think, how can I research this? How can I find out more? So that was the start, really. I started writing about Denmark for British newspapers, just the strange things that seem funny when you have that outsider's eye, and all the things that we perhaps take for granted in the UK that was just so different in Scandinavia. So I started writing about that, and then I got asked to write the book. So I had been keeping a journal because, again, no friends in the strange country. So I had a lot of material already. And then it was really just documenting the things I learned, looking at a different area of Danish living each month to see what Danes did differently and if I could change my life as a result. Because I thought, if I can't get happier in the happiest country on earth, then where could I? So that was the idea.
We got no hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, firstly, I'm really sorry to hear the years of, you know, fertility problems. It's just not nice to hear at all. But do you know what I really loved about your book was the fact that you didn't sugarcoat anything. It was, this is what really happens when you relocate, you know, like you just mentioned,
You have to find friends. You have to adapt to a new culture. We always think the grass is greener on the other side and let's just go and live abroad for a year. But I just loved that you made it funny and you made it real.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really important for me that it's not, it's not a PR piece for Scandinavia. It's the highs and the lows, and it's not perfect by any means. There's some ups and downs in there.
Yeah, so don't worry, listeners. We're not here to tell you that you all should move to Denmark and that will solve all your problems.
No.
But there is this mass popularity with the concept. Hygge, is it Hygge?
Hygge, yes.
That's how you say Hygge. It.
Well, Mike will have pronounced it far, far better than I. But yeah, Hygge, this sort of guttural sound, yeah. That only the Danes really make properly.
Yeah. And it is amazing that we grip onto these kind of concepts and we think, well, that's it. That's going to solve all of our problems. But I just like that you can kind of, a lot of the stuff you do is based on research. So you moved over to another book. Which one came next? Was it The Atlas of Happiness or was it Leap Year? Which one?
Well, I actually wrote Leap Year next because it was only ever supposed to be a year. The clue was in the title. It was the year of living Danishly. I only ever planned to be there for a year. But we found, weighing up the pros and cons, that actually it seemed to be a really good place to live. We quite liked it. And I also found out maybe I shouldn't do spoilers. I don't know. Anyone who hasn't read the book. But I now have a very busy household. So Leap Year was written because we kind of had planned to ourselves that we would be going back to the UK. And part of me didn't want to. And I felt that sort of good daughter responsibility to go back and be with my family and see my friends and family and really sort of take back up the career reins on the traditional path of working in an organization and being a part of something, which I had aspired to my whole life, as many of us do. We see the career path as a straight line rather than something curvier. So I kind of felt I should be doing that, but I was terrified. And I've always been quite bad with change and quite wary of it and not brave at all. And I just wanted to dig in again to why that was, why it is that some people appear Teflon coated and not afraid of anything, and why some people are so anxious, even from deviating off piste on a menu. So I started looking into the science of change and how we could understand it and make changes for the better in every area of our lives. So I guess that was going a bit more into social psychology and anthropology of why we are the way we are, and the monkey brain and the reptilian brain, and how we could change our approach to things like money and the body and mind and friends and family. So that was an interesting voyage of self-discovery, with bringing in experts and some guinea pigs along the way as well.
See, I love that you say you're not brave, but from the outside, you are incredibly brave and you've written all these amazing books. But that's what I think is so beautiful about this type of thing. You know, you may appear brave on the outside, but you might be an introvert. You may, we all get nervous. We all get anxious.
Oh, well, it's true. Yeah, it's true.
Well, I'd love to talk about all your books, but I definitely can't. So The Atlas of Happiness, I just wanted to touch on it briefly because I loved that you explored different cultures and their versions of happiness, because I think that's so key. We can easily pick up a book and say, well, this will solve all my problems, I'm going to do this to be happy. But every culture is completely different. So one question I had on that book, was there anything that really surprised you when you were doing your research?
Oh, that's a great question. I think many things. It came about because after I'd written The Year of Living Danishly and it was published all over the world, to my utter surprise and delight, that then I started getting letters from readers all over the world saying, well, what about my country? And you haven't talked about this. And I didn't know about all of these countries. So I started traveling more. I started interviewing people from all over. And I guess the whole thing is a surprise. I think that the biggest thing for me afterwards was how the world felt both a smaller place and a bigger place by the end. I guess smaller because no matter who I was speaking to from whichever country and whatever cultural concepts of happiness were valued in that country, we are all human beings. We all sleep, we eat, we love, we care, we cry. And it felt like there was a sort of connection, a universal humanity that we all shared. And then the world also felt smaller because there was so much I had yet to discover in so many countries. There are 30 countries in the book, actually 31 because I did a new Polish edition, but 31 countries I cover, but there's so much yet to learn. And that feels lovely as well. I think as adults, many of us stop learning in the traditional, in the formal sense, but there's so much out there. And as soon as we're allowed to, I cannot wait to go and learn some more and travel some more and learn about different cultures. But yeah, then that was a really lovely thing to be able to sort of open up. And I had people stopping me in the street and stopping me at baggage carousels at airports to say, oh, well, do you know what they do in my country is this? So that felt a really lovely kind of calling card for people from all over the world to share their stories with me, which is a massive privilege. So it felt really great to be able to do that.
That's lovely. And it's nice to hear how proud people are of where they come from, you know.
Yes.
I think that's really a really beautiful thing. And it'd be so interesting to know how things have changed, especially during the last year, because obviously everyone hasn't been able to travel, and have people's perceptions of what happiness is changed due to the change in lifestyle. And
yeah, I wonder if people will develop a more appreciation for their own country because they've had to be stuck in it.
Or they won't.
Or there will be frustrations for their government. Yeah. But I think being not proud of our country is a particularly British thing. You know, certainly compared to Denmark and places in the US, in Denmark there is a real pride in your country. There's a flag is flown everywhere. So, yeah, it's a really difficult one.
Actually, there's a really nice chapter about the flag.
Yes.
In your book, How to Live Danishly. I won't. I might share a snippet of that when I edit this.
I get in trouble. Yes.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, let's dive into your new book called How to Be Sad. So I think this is a really lovely concept because there has been a lot of sadness, especially this year, and there's a lot of things that have been happening that have just been very difficult for a lot of people. But I really love that this book teaches you that sadness isn't a bad thing and you can find joy in some of those moments, and it's about being human. So could you tell listeners a little bit about the book and what your inspiration was behind it?
Yeah, so again, back when we could travel and do things, I would talk to people about my work into happiness research for the last 8 years now. I talked to people from all over the world, and people would often ask me afterwards, you know, how can I be happy? But they'd be at times in their life when really that was incredibly challenging. Maybe they'd just lost a loved one, or been made redundant, or lost their home, or had caring responsibilities that they didn't feel supported in. And I just became aware that we had become so obsessed with the pursuit of happiness that we are phobic of feeling sad in many places around the world now. And this feels like a problem because, as you say, sadness is normal. It's something we will all experience. It's a natural reaction when we experience a loss or a disappointment. And there are actually some really good things about being sad too. Counterintuitively, we are more generous. We have greater perseverance. We're more clear-sighted. We are nicer people when we're sad. And even crying serves a purpose. It reduces cortisol, the stress hormone. So we feel better after a cry. And it's inevitable. We're all going to face it. So we might as well know how to do it right. So I wanted to really dig into this. And having been raised, you know, quite with the pressure to be happy, for a long time in the UK, it's been this British stiff upper lip, or what you don't talk about can't hurt you. And although we have uplifting montages at the end of reality TV shows, actually being sad is not necessarily considered a good thing. So I wanted to challenge that really and look at the science behind why we feel sad and what we should be doing when we're sad, from geneticists and psychologists and, you know, anthropologists, historians, looking really at the whole perspective and the whole area of sadness, and then also speaking to some household names about how they handle their sadness, because I'm massively nosy. And also I just think it's interesting to bring in the kind of the science bit, and then also the, oh, I know that person, this is interesting how they cope with that. So yeah, that was my hope. And it's been a really, really interesting journey, and rereading it for the audiobook in the last couple of weeks has really helped me as well. You know, I feel very, very grateful that I've had the experience of the expertise of all of these people. So I hope there are some useful steps that others will also find support in.
Okay, so on the book, How to Be Sad, do you think people find it quite difficult? I mean, you said it already, kind of that stiff upper lip in the UK is definitely something that people struggle with. But I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that especially during the pandemic, everybody has been a little bit more open about how they're feeling and kind of embracing that sort of sadness.
Yeah, I agree. I think people have woken up to the fact that actually it's quite normal. Maybe after the first lockdown, there was still this sense of, oh, it's fine, just keep going, bake banana bread. Yeah. But as we've come into, you know, for example, lockdown 3, there's that, yeah, we are all feeling something. We are collectively, you know, grieving the life that we used to have in some respects. But I think we still don't necessarily know how to handle it. We don't know how to talk about it. We don't always even have the vocabulary to talk about it, or know the things that actually will help us. So there's still lots of memes about wine o'clock. And of course, who doesn't love a glass of wine? But, you know, that's not massively perhaps dealing with the problem or dealing with the challenge and the perfectly normal feelings of loss and disappointment and sadness and anger. Like, a lot of people feel very angry towards the government, towards their household members. It's a time when we have a lot of these emotions. And I think it's it's also now is the time where we have to learn how to handle them in a more healthy way. So yeah, I think this feels like the time to be doing the work.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of posts about toxic positivity, I think it is. And I'm not gonna try and explain what it means because I don't think I'll do it justice, but it kind of goes against the way people kind of say, oh, okay, like you just said, or have some wine, or you know, you'll be fine, your life's great, and not really kind of embracing that sadness and listening to each other. So even just picking up this book makes you feel like, right, it's okay if I'm sad, I'm reading this book and I'm allowed to be sad.
yeah thank you. And I think as well, because it's got the nice cloud on the front, it feels sort of quite aesthetically pleasing. So there was some concerns at the beginning, would people be happy sitting with this on the tube? I mean, not that anyone could go on the tube or go anywhere much at the moment, but I think because it's quite pretty and it's quite sort of designy, men and women apparently are okay holding it.
Yeah, whereas if it had a giant tear on there.
Yes, exactly. Yes, can you imagine? Yeah.
So you've actually turned it into a podcast now, or did you do a podcast before?
No, I did. So I finished that. I'm not great at multitasking, which I used to be quite ashamed of. But actually, studies have shown, I got my geek head on again, and studies have shown that actually none of us are good at multitasking. It's really bad. It makes the output that we do not so good. So I finished the writing of it, and then I moved my attention to the podcast. So we just finished... I finished all the recording for series one, which is out now, and I'm now starting to record for series two. But yeah, it's really carrying on having these fascinating conversations that I've been having for the book with people who are either from a really interesting background or who are household names who have their own experience of sadness that people might not know them for. So, for example, I had Deliciously Ella's Ella Mills on, and we think of her as a hugely successful businesswoman, you know, plant-based living advocate, but actually she has her own journey of regret and loss and chronic illness. And I think there is something incredibly helpful, as you say, about showing our vulnerability, about saying, you know, if someone who looks like that, who seems to have it all, if they go through these things too, if they experience this sadness, then maybe it's okay if I do and if I talk about it as well. So that was my hope with that one.
Yeah. I think that's a podcast that's definitely going to capture people's thoughts. And you know what's lovely about a podcast, probably why I love them so much, is no one knows what you're listening to.
Yes, that's true.
You can listen to whatever you like. And yeah, that made me sound really strange.
Absolute filth. No, this is not that. I spoke to Mo Gaudet for this week's episode, and he speaks so movingly about the loss of his son. So Mo was head of Moonshot Factory of Google X. He's like a tech entrepreneur business.
Oh, actually, I've listened to this episode.
Ah, yes. And he's great. And he wrote Solve for Happy, this algorithm for happiness. And he's really great. And it's lots of people who you might not expect to have such strong views on sadness, but he's very, despite really campaigning for happiness now, he's absolutely adamant that, of course, you have to sit with sadness as well. And life isn't about avoiding sadness and avoiding the pain. Mm-hmm. And if we try to avoid it, then we're not really living at all. So yeah, it feels like this is a really important time to be sharing this message, because it's something we're all going through together.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing it. I think it's really, really important. So what's next for you? Anything you can share?
Well, series two of the podcast. Then I've got an idea for another book, but I need to do some digging and work out what the story would be first. Yeah.
No, that's fine. So because we were talking about podcasts, I would love to know what else you're listening to.
Oh, I listen to a lot of podcasts. So Book Shambles with Robin Ince and Josie Long, I love. I like Freakonomics and Slow Mo. See, a lot of podcasts that I went on and then I started listening to them in a total sort of egomaniac right away to listen. And then I got hooked. So I love those now. I love Table Manners, Off Menu, Richard Herring's podcast. There's loads I love.
So many.
I love Lockdown Parenting Hell with Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe. That's great too.
I love those too.
They're so good. So good. So yeah, lots of ones to make me think, and then lots of ones to keep spirits up this year have been really helpful.
Yeah. To close, is there anything you do every day that you think makes the most difference to your life? And it doesn't have to be anything you've mentioned in the books.
I think it's probably just as simple as walking. After 12 years living and working in London in glossy magazines, wearing shoes that were not comfortable, yeah. I have not looked back since I moved to Denmark of wearing comfortable shoes Wellington-based or trainers, depending on the weather. And that just makes me move. And the weather is frequently terrible where I am. But if you dress right for it, you can go out. And just being out there and walking, I mean, nothing feels worse after a walk and things often feel better. So walking is what really makes a difference for me.
Oh, see, that's lovely. It's really honest as well. I find exactly the same thing. We recently got a dog, well, I say recently, a few months ago, and it's made me walk just so much more. And you get back and, like you said, you have a cup of tea and everything feels a little bit normal again, which is really nice.
Yeah. It's never felt worse. That's my one thing, is like life is never worse after a walk. So you may as well.
Yeah, I really like that. Well, it was so lovely having you on the show. Thank you. Best of luck with season 2.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem.